It's Saturday, the 21st of May, 2016. Happy birthday to Isaiah Cannon. Basketball Monster Show, brought to you by Loot Crate and G-Radical 22. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you want to be like G-Radical 22 and sponsor the podcast, all you need to do is leave a review on iTunes, and you can become a sponsor of the show too. So thank you to G-Radical, and thank you to everyone who has helped out the show throughout the year by leaving a review, by leaving a rating on iTunes. It's been tremendous, the amount that we've gotten, and it does help everything with this show tick along at a pretty good rate. If you are watching this show live on YouTube, which you can do with any of the shows that we do, and you want to interact as the show is going live to air, tweet at me at redrock_bball, and we can have a bit of a back and forth as we talk about the Brooklyn Nets in today's podcast, a team which, judging by the state of the questions that you guys asked, don't have a very rosy future. And I think that's fair enough, but I think there's some hidden gems, maybe is the best way of saying it. And in terms of fantasy anyway, they were a team that performed better than, say, the Los Angeles Lakers, who we covered yesterday in their fantasy output. And there's a few little hidden things in this team that I think is it's definitely worth mentioning and might get swept under the rug in some circumstances. The Nets, we know their story. We know their lack of future assets. They brought in a new GM, Sean Marks, and a new coach, Kenny Atkinson. They have just one pick in this upcoming draft, and that is pick 55, so they're not relying upon the draft at this point unless they make trades. But there has been talk come out that they won't be trading away assets like Brook Lopez or Thad Young in the near future to get more of those draft picks. They finished with a record of 17-65 last season, which is obviously pretty poor. Actually, that record doesn't sound right. Did I write it down? No, 21-61. That's the record they had. They finished with a record of 21-61 last season. Obviously not ideal, the third worst in the league, but their pick ends up going to Boston, which was the third pick due to that failed Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce trade of a couple of seasons back. So the Nets, Kenny Atkinson, we don't really know what he's going to bring to this team. He was an assistant in Atlanta. So if he brings that sort of Spurs, Hawks mentality to this team, that's nothing but a good thing. We've yet to see how it actually plays out on the court and how it impacts these guys fantasy-wise. But you know, we saw what Budenholzer did in Atlanta, and it was a very solid rotation, a very, like, these are our starters, and these are the guys that are playing minutes, and they are playing 30-plus minutes most nights. And I think we'll see a similar situation like that in Brooklyn, just because of the lack of talent and the lack of bench depth on this team. And when they find someone who's playing well or is a good player, they're going to have to play those sort of minutes. Let's take a look at the free agency situation for this team. They have Donald Sloan, who's an unrestricted free agent. He is the only unrestricted free agent on this team at the moment. A couple of restricted free agents, Sergei Karasev, Willie Reed, Markel Brown, and Henry Sims are all restricted. You've got a couple of guys with player options. Thomas Robinson has got a $1 million player option. He will decline that player option. Shane Larkin's got a $1.5 million player option. You would think almost guaranteed that he would decline that. And Wayne Ellington has got a $1.5 million player option as well. And you'd have to think that he would decline that as well. Jarrett Jack's contract is not fully guaranteed, and he's coming off ACL surgery. They might decide that they bite the bullet and get rid of Jack there, because he's 32 years old, he's coming off an ACL surgery, he's not great anyway, he might not be around. But you would think that those other guys, Robinson, Larkin, Ellington, will all decline their player options and become free agents to join the group of Karasev, Sloan, Reed, Brown, Sims. The best thing about that group is that these guys aren't the key players on this team, with the exception of Larkin, who could become a key player. But Ellington, Karasev, you know, Sloan, Reed, Sims, these aren't great players. Markel Brown's got a little bit of potential, but these aren't guys that have a huge amount of focus on this team, a huge amount of importance on this side moving forward. Let's get into these players now. Brook Lopez was obviously the clear far and away winner in this team in terms of fantasy value. He finished the season ranked 23rd, which was a massive improvement on what he did last year. Not just, it wasn't injury-wise, because he played a big chunk of last year anyway, but that's two seasons in a row where he's been basically injury-free and turned in a tremendous year this year. He was in that end of the second round value. You didn't have to draft him there last season because of the injury concerns. I think I got him in the 40s in one of my leagues. Now, I think that that comes down heading into next season, but people are still worried about the injuries. So even if he finishes 24th or 25th in rankings, I don't think you're going to have to pick him there. I think you will still be picking him in the 30s or potentially late 30s, 40s, because he still hasn't overcome that stigma of having that the foot problem. Oh, he's injured. He's going to hurt his foot. And that's fair enough. But something I've always been saying about Brook Lopez, and something I heard a couple of years ago with the latest surgery he had on his foot, it was either going to fix it for good or he wasn't going to play again. And that was, and what we've seen is it's fixed it for good so far. And this is a big, you know, touch wood, but he's been fine. And he's been really good from a fantasy point of view. He averaged 20.5 points, 8 rebounds, 2 assists, 1.7 blocks and 0.8 steals. And some of his real value comes in the fact that he's a 51 and 79% shooter from the field and from the line. He started taking some threes, didn't go so well. He hit just 15% of them, didn't take many of them, but still he started doing it. And in preseason, we saw him start to do that as well, but that's obviously not his bread and butter at this point. But he was solid yet again. You'd imagine he remains at that solid level for the next couple of seasons. He's going to be the best player on this team by a clear margin again next season and probably the season after. So not a huge amount to worry about if you own Brook Lopez outside of the injury. He clearly led this team in win shares. He clearly was right up the top in terms of box score plus minus. He led there. He even had a positive defensive plus box score plus minus, which is not something that many people associate with Brook Lopez. He had the best PER on the team at 21.7, which is a tremendous amount. He blocked shots. His shooting was great. Look, overall, he had a really successful season, and I imagine it continuing for the next couple of years. Thad Young was the next best player on this team, again, by a fairly large margin. He had a tremendous improvement over what he did in 2014/15, where he ranked at the end of the year 85th in 8-cat leagues. This year, he came in 44th. So that's a big jump. And he was lost in Minnesota last season, came across to Brooklyn, and still didn't really sort of hit what he needed to do. But this year, he moved back to almost Philadelphia, Thad Young, which was a really significant fantasy player and significant contributor in the NBA. Now, he's not going to be a great player on a great team or anything like that, but this is not a great team, and this won't be a great team for the next couple of seasons. And Young is 27. He's same age as Brook Lopez. They're right sort of in the peak of their careers, and he was going to continue producing at this rate. Now, what he did last season is he stopped taking three-pointers. He sort of developed a three-point shot in Philadelphia, started using it in Minnesota, but last season he said, nope, not doing this anymore. Took it back to just being a closer to the rim sort of play. And he can hit threes if necessary, but he just didn't do it at all last season. And allowed him to do from a fantasy point of view is take his field goal percentage right back up. The previous two seasons, he'd been at 45 and 47. This year, he finished at 51.5% from the field. He went down from 1.1 and 0.5 threes made per game to 0.1. He attempted, in 2013-14, he attempted 3.7 triples a game. This year, 0.4. So it's a big, big drop-off, but it played him closer to the rim. He was able to get more rebounds. He averaged a career high 9.1 rebounds this season. The steals are always tremendous for Thad Young in terms of as a forward. He averaged 1.5 steals. And he's a guy who has gotten 2 steals per game at some point in his career. So that's obviously a huge amount for a guy that's a power forward eligible player. And again, I don't imagine huge amounts changing for Thad Young moving forward. Who are the Nets bringing in that are going to be better than him as their starting power forward? Look, maybe for some reason a free agent decides to come across, but I don't see it happening. They've got no incentive to be bad, the Nets. They are bad. They've got no incentive to be bad, so there's no reason for them to trade these guys off just to be bad unless they can get significant assets back. And I don't really think that's the way that they want to go. They want to have some sort of veteran leadership around some of the players they bring in, some of the D-League guys they're going to be trying out. And that's what Sean Marks has said they're going to be doing, just cycling through D-League players to see if they can get something to stick, or trying out guys, because that's really the only avenue they have is to get prospect type players without the draft picks that they do have. So Thad Young, I think, for the next couple of years, has got a pretty solid value there. 15-9 last year, 1.5 steals, 0.5 block, 2 assists, 51-64 as his percentages. Pretty solid stuff. Jarrett Jack, He was a guy that I was very interested in preseason last season, and not because he's good, because I don't think he's good in any stretch of the imagination as a basketball player at this point in his career as a 32-year-old. But he was given the opportunity, and he had the opportunity to put up big numbers because there was no one else there. And he was doing all right. He ended up as the 107th ranked player in 9 cat leagues, 72nd in 8 cat leagues, and that's tremendous. But then the ACL in January, and that was the end of his season. And it potentially is the end of his, almost definitely is the end of his career as a starting point guard in the league. He might come back as a backup at some point. He might return to the Nets. We don't know what they're going to do with his contract at this point. But he played 32 minutes a game. That won't happen again. He was at 13, 4, and 7.5. He had a 3 a game, 1.1 steals, and 39 and 89 is his percentage. So not great numbers, but still pretty good. You know, 7.5 assists, 13 points, a 3, and 1.1 steal with almost 90% from the line. They're pretty good numbers. I just don't imagine we see anything like that from him in the future. So his dynasty value is way, way down. The Nets have got a young point guard there in Shane Larkin who they'd be looking to bring back in. And hopefully they give him the reins and let him run things next season with Jack. Not going to be, like, he might be ready to go by opening night. He's not going to be 100% by opening night. That'll be like 9 months or 9.5 months after his ACL injury, which is sort of right on the borderline for people to come back. Some people don't come back that quickly. And as an older guy, you would have to put doubts on him coming back and being able to assume a starting mantle that early on in the season. From an advanced numbers point of view, Jack wasn't great. No point looking at his win shares because it's a cumulative stat, but in win shares per 48, he was 8th on the team. You know, that's not too bad. He was 5th in his box score plus minus, but he's poor defensively, a negative 1.4 in that stat there. A complete zero on offense. He was just above replacement player. He had a 14.4 PER, so basically he was just average in what he contributed to this team. So the assists were nice. Good that he is able to get some threes. That's not something he's been able to do before, but I can't see anything positive for him moving forward. I think that he does really start to take a pretty significant drop-off after this season. I was going to say, speaking of drop-offs, but that doesn't make sense. Today's podcast is brought to you by Loot Crate. And Loot Crate is a monthly subscription box service. It's for epic geek and gamer items and pop culture gear. It's less than $20 a month, and you get 6 to 8 items, including licensed gear, apparel, collectibles, and unique one-of-a-kind items. We have our own unique URL for Loot Crate, and that is lootcrate.com/redrock. And if you use that unique URL, then you can also use our coupon code, which is redrock, for a $3 saving off any new subscription. Last month's or this month's theme was power, and that is now kaput. You can't get your hold on those Marvel items, the Warcraft stuff, the Dragon Ball Z items, because on the 19th of each month, that gets shut off. But still, head across to lootcrate.com/redrock, browse the options they've got there, sign up for a new subscription if it's something you like, and eagerly await the crate that they'll be putting together for the June month, which we don't know what it is going to be at this point, but rest assured, the guys at Loot Crate do a fantastic job of selecting products that you will love and enjoy. lootcrate.com/redrock is the site to go to. The next guy is probably the most intriguing player to me out of everyone on this team, and that is Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, a player that the Nets got in a trade last offseason for Mason Plumlee. He was drafted by the Portland Trailblazers, and they traded him across in exchange for Plumlee. And Hollis-Jefferson had an interrupted rookie season, but still showed enough for me to get pretty excited. He played 29 games at just 21 minutes a pop, but he finished ranked 135 per game. He finished, that's 9 cat, 158 in 8 cat leagues, 134 in 8 minus 2 punting situations. So pretty impressive for a guy playing just 21 minutes a game. He averaged just 5.8 points. That's not good. He averaged 0.1 threes. He's got to work on that. But 5.3 rebounds, 1.5 assists, 1.3 steals, 0.6 blocks on 46 and 71. There's a lot to work with Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. I think that everything about him screams that he is going to have a really big second season to me, and he will be a guy that should be taken in most standard leagues. Now, he's not going to be scoring 18 points a game. That's not going to happen. But he could be a guy that gets you 10 points. He could be a guy that gets you 11 points. He could add 0.3 triples, but he's a guy that's going to approach one. He's going to approach 2 steals a game. He can get 6 rebounds a game. He might get to 8.8 blocks a game, and I think his percentages take a 2 or 3% jump in either one of those, and maybe a 48 and 77 type of guy. I think that he's got a lot to like Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. I think his dynasty upside is tremendous on this team. So when you look at the Nets and go, they're a barren wasteland of crapness, yes, but Lopez is good, Young's good, and Hollis-Jefferson's got the ability to really become good in a couple of seasons' time. So if for some reason his dynasty owner is not aware of that, or he's sitting around on a waiver wire somewhere in, a 14-man dynasty and he's still there, grab him, because I do think that he will comfortably be or exceed his 135 ranking from this season, and that's great, considering he played just 21 minutes, but he goes up to 28 minutes, 29 minutes, playing as the starting small forward on this team. I think we can see a guy really entering into that top 100 realm and becoming a super fantasy contributor. So he is definitely someone who I think has got a massive arrow up on him next season. And his player comps come out really nicely as well in terms of how he can develop. He finished fifth on the team in win shares, playing just 29 games, which is a tremendous number. Third on the team in win shares per 48. Second on the team in box score plus minus. Led the team in defensive box score plus minus at a 2.6, where the next highest was 1.1. And his offense, which is obviously a work in progress, was a negative 1.4, but not the worst on the team. There are other people who were worse than him in that sort of area. Basically an average PER, decent true shooting percentage. Once he starts to develop some three-point shooting, the offense will come and the defense is already there. I have got tremendously high hopes for Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. I didn't think I'd be saying that. And you would have heard me speak about him during the season, saying, when he came back from his ankle injury, everyone's like, I need to stash him. I'm like, just calm your tits, because what's he going to do? He can come in and he was going to get you some steals, but he wasn't going to play full minutes and he wasn't going to be the savior. This season, completely different story. I think that he comes in full bore, big minutes, big production. Really looking forward to seeing Rondae Hollis-Jefferson this season. Really, really excited. The next guy that I do like is Shane Larkin. And he didn't have a great year, that's to be fair. He finished 197th in 9-cat, 164th in 8-cat leagues, which is not great. But when you look at a punting situation, 146, that's getting a little bit better. Now, he ended up playing just 22 minutes a game, 7 points, half a 3, 2.5 rebounds, 4.5 assists, 1.2 steals at 44 and 78. So really solid percentages, 36% from 3 as well. So some decent numbers from Larkin. But as I touched on when I'm talking about Jarrett Jack, I don't think Jack is back. Now, they would like to bring Larkin back, I think. That is the understanding that I get. And he's not a great point guard, but they're not going to be able to attract a great point guard, I don't think. They're not going to be getting Mike Conley to come across to play in Brooklyn. Maybe they do. I don't think that they do, though. And then if Larkin comes back with a decent raise, maybe he gets $8 million a year, fine. And they, for, the next 2 or 3 years, and they see how it all plays out with him. What he is a guy who can get steals in big bunches. He can assist the ball, as we've seen. And he's just got to start developing his offense and his scoring a little bit. But it did start to come on at the end of the year. I didn't like the way that they ran with Donald Sloan for big chunks of the season. Larkin, before Jarrett Jack went down, was a top 100 player, playing as a backup and playing alongside him. And he was putting up some really good numbers. Offensively, he was looking good. Defensively, he was great as well. But then when Jack went down, they gave him like 2 games starting and then moved to Donald Sloan. And Sloan's really bad. Like, he put up some decent numbers at times, but he's not a good player. Eventually, they switched to Larkin at the end of the season, and he was putting up some really good numbers and looked solid to me and looked like someone who could be sort of built around. And that's we don't know how that's going to work out at this point, but I do think that Larkin will be a guy, depending on how everything shakes out in the offseason, he'll be an end-of-the-draft standard league guy. For Dynasty, I'm not sure he ever becomes like a top 75 type of player. I don't think he's that great. But he does have some intrigue, especially on the defensive end, where he is quite a ball hound, and he will go after these steals and he will get some numbers. He finished fourth on the team in win shares, behind, ironically, Donald Sloan, who I don't think is very good. When I look at him, I just think that it's more trajectory with him that I'm looking at. It's not going to be Jack. It's not going to be Sloan, who's very old. He's 28, Sloan, for a guy who's as bad as he is, and he's an unrestricted free agent. Larkin's 23. It's his third year in the league. He's had some injury problems. Let's see how he goes. I think that he's a very intriguing guy. He's a very cheap piece in, say, a 16-team dynasty league that might be around. Maybe he becomes a 14-teamer, and there's a big, massive possibility he even becomes a 12-teamer by the start of next season. So I think that he has got tremendous upside as well. So he's another player where I don't think that it's he shouldn't be lumped in with that. Oh, this team is complete trash or anything like that, because they are pretty trashy, but they're not complete trash. There is a little bit of something to like with this side. Henry Sims actually put together some decent numbers when he came over. He ranked 183rd in nine cat leagues. He ranked 208th in nine cat leagues, and that's great, but it was only in 14 games. He was at 6.5 and 5. He had 0.9 blocks in that time, 43 and 83. Now, he couldn't stick in Philadelphia. That was a nice little run of games that he had there at the end in Brooklyn. But as a free agent, as Henry Sims is, I don't really, I don't imagine that he is going to be, well, people are going to be busting his door down to re-sign him. He was decent, but I think at this point we know who Henry Sims is. He's a big who can't shoot a high percentage. He's not all that great defensively for most of the time, although he did post a positive defensive box score, plus minus. And in terms of advanced numbers, he was pretty high up in this team. He finished 6th in win shares per 48. He in box score plus minus, he finished, you know, not that great, 11th because of his poor offense. But overall, he's not a winning player, and not much to like with Henry Sims. If we don't see him play in the NBA again, outside of maybe a 10-day contract, I would not be surprised at all. Bojan Bogdanović. Really, really disappointing season to me from Bogdanović. He had a real opportunity, especially considering the way he finished last season, to put in a massive year. But it didn't happen. He struggled for the majority of the season, had a pretty good second half of the year post-All-Star break. He finished 233rd over the course of the season, 210th in 8 cat leagues. But post-All-Star, he went 186th in 9 and 157th in 8 cat leagues. I was hoping for a lot more from him, but he struggled to hold on to a role under both coaches. They went inexplicably with guys like Wayne Ellington over him. Now, with Bogdanović, he played 27 minutes a game. He averaged 11.2 points, 1.6 triples, 3.2 rebounds. Defense-wise, he doesn't bring much, 0.4 steals, and 43 and 83 is his percentage. So nothing bad there. He's a 38% shooter from three. That's great as well. But he needs to have, you know, he needed to play a little bit more minutes, and he needed to play better in those minutes too. But I don't think he was used correctly by this team. Now, in terms of a starting shooting guard, this team has no one at this point. It could be Bogdanović. Maybe it's Sean Kilpatrick, who looked good at the end of the season. It's definitely not Wayne Ellington, and I don't think it's Markel Brown. So Bogdanović has an opportunity, again, to play opposite, to play next to Rondae Hollis-Jefferson in the starting lineup. But will I be looking at him as a starter in standard leagues? Probably not. Or as a draftable guy? Probably not. In dynasty leagues, where does he fit? He's 27, so he's sort of right in the peak of his career. He's got one more year left on his current deal. Then he becomes a restricted free agent. What do we make of Bojan Bogdanović? I do think that he is a decent player. Box score plus minus hated him last season. He was third worst on this team. He was third worst in win shares per 48. He was ninth in win shares in total, and that's playing 79 games. So his season was definitely not a success by his standards. But I do think that he does have the ability. He can hit threes at a really nice rate. His shooting is pretty solid. He had a true shooting of 55%, which is pretty impressive. But he just didn't do enough. He went past the ball. He does nothing defensively. And his defensive box score plus minus at a negative 2.9 is pretty poor, and it was third worst on the team behind Andrea Bargnani, just ahead of it, Andrea Bargnani and Sean Kilpatrick, who are obviously, as we know, dreadful defenders. So Bogdanović has got a little bit. I think he has a better season than last season, but where that is, and it really depends if they bring in any younger wing players, or if they trust Sean Kilpatrick to get the job done, which I don't at this point. Bogdanović does have an opportunity to have a bit of a bounce back season next season. Speaking of Kilpatrick, he turned in a pretty impressive second half of the season. He floated around in Denver with a couple of 10 days early on, ended up in Brooklyn on some 10 days, and then signed a long-term deal. He is signed for the next couple of seasons through till 2017-18 in cheap contracts, like less than $1 million as well, so he's on a pretty good value. And when he came across, well, he played 20 minutes a game for the season, 11 points, 1.3 triples, but he does nothing else. He's a Nick Young type, 1.8 rebounds, 0.9 assists, 0.4 steals, 46-90 is his percentages though, so really, really solid there, and he's a 34% three-point shooter. What does he bring? Well, he brings scoring. He brings three-point shooting, he brings free throws, and that's all fine. Ranking-wise, 211th, pretty good. 171 post-All-Star, not too bad, but I don't think he's going to be a guy that really jumps up into becoming a 12-team league guy. He's going to remain that 16 to 18-team league guy and definitely a stream guy. Hey, I need 13 points out of someone. Kilpatrick might get me 13 in 20 minutes, and he's that guy that can do that. I don't think he's a starter caliber player. I think he's a spark plug sixth man, 21, 22 minute a guy, a game guy off the bench, and that's sort of where he sits. He does need to improve his three-point shooting, but he's quite adept at getting to the rack and quite adept at actually scoring. He's an old-school type of scorer, someone who just knows how to put points on the board. And he doesn't do it through his three-point shot. As I said, only 34% from three. He did hit over one a game, but he didn't convert those at a super high rate. But if we look at his shooting splits, he took 61% of his shots from two, and he took 27 of them at the rim, which is a pretty high amount for a guy who's a guard. Didn't take many mid ranges, and he hit 68% of his shots at the rim, which is obviously a tremendously high amount. And then his three-pointers not quite as high there, but he did put together some pretty nice numbers, and he is a scorer. But don't expect too much else from Sean Kilpatrick. Does his arrow point up? I think it points up to a degree. He is 26 though, so I wouldn't be expecting too much of an improvement. But maybe a full off season with the team, integrated into a new game plan, maybe he can jump, and instead of being a guy that's ranked outside the top 200, he can be that guy who hovers around 150 and provides maybe 14 points, maybe 1.5 threes, and decent percentages, and helps you in that area. But don't expect too much else in the other categories. We're really heading down into the trash now of this team. Don Sloan is the next guy we're going to take a look at. He's not good, and I could almost leave it at that. He played 61 games at 22 minutes, 7, 3, and 4.5, 0.6 triples, half a steal, 44 and 75, just very, very pedestrian numbers. Sloan is 28 years old. He's an unrestricted free agent. He catches on somewhere as a backup, no doubt, but this was the opportunity for him to really turn in a big season, and he didn't take advantage of it, so I don't see how his value really improves moving forward. Now, he had some decent games. He had some games where he went, shit, Donald Sloan almost got a triple-double, and he went, what is actually happening in this world when that's what's going on? But it did happen, and he finished third on the team in win shares at 2, which is not a big number, but when the team is consisted of so many other garbage players, it's not bad. And his win shares per 48, he was pretty decent there as well, finishing 7th in that metric. So some decent numbers from him, but I just don't believe in him as a long-term player, and I don't think that he's going to be brought back to challenge for the starting point guard role again. If they're bringing someone back, it's Larkin, and Sloan will be pushed back down in the depth chart, and I'll stick with my thoughts that he is just not a good player. Chris McCullough. Didn't see much of him. ACL injury before the draft meant that he was a bit of a steal at the end of the first round where the Nets got him. He finished the season ranked 256th, 269 in eight cat leagues, which is pretty good. If we look at his 8-2 rank, 269, like not too bad. I like him. He played 24 games at 15 minutes. He was at 4.7 points. He hit half a three in that time, 2.8 rebounds, 1.2 steals, half a block, 40 and 48. And that's where the big downside is, that his shooting was terrible. He was a 37% shooter from three, which is great, but it is a really small sample size. He's 20 years old. I think that he has got a tremendous future ahead of him. He's already shown a lot defensively in terms of his defensive box score plus minus. He was second on the team, so two rookies led this team in defense, Hollis Jefferson and McCullough. I really do think that McCullough can be a very, very interesting player. He didn't really take threes in college. He took one and he hit it, so 100% conversion in college. Cool. That's not something that's going to really continue moving forward, but a big percentage of his shots, 30% of his shots he took from three, and he hit 38 of them. So that's good for a power forward. I think that he's got a lot to really look forward to, and we've got a lot to look forward to. Now, he's going to play behind Thad Young, but by the end of the season, and probably next season, maybe he becomes the starting power forward next season. There is definitely a lot to like with what he brings. His win shares per 48 were okay. He ranked 8th on the team. He can do a lot. He can do a lot defensively. Steals, blocks, that's where his real value starts to come in. Rebounding, not bad, but adding a three as a stretch four type player defensively, I think he's going to get on the court. He's going to play more minutes than what he did last season where he played 15 a game. I think it's more realistic to see him in a 22-minute a game role, and that's going to jump him up in dynasty formats. It's going to be deeper leagues. He's not going to be challenging standard league formats, I don't think, for next season. He won't be drafted in 12-team leagues next season, but you need to look for him for 2 years down the track as he gets that field goal percentage up. Still worried about the free throw percentage because that is obviously not great. He shot 56% in college, just less than 50 in the NBA. So he's not going to be a great free throw shooter, but he can improve it to 60% or so. It's not completely horrible. And I do like his ability to become almost a Thad Young type of player, a guy who can score, who can hit some threes, which Young didn't do this season, but he has in his past, a big defensive terror steals-wise, get some blocks, and a subpar free throw shooter. I do liken him to that sort of game as Young, and he's got Young to look at and mold his game on. I really am excited about what Chris McCullough could do, and I think that he, in a deeper dynasty format, if you're investing for the next couple of seasons, he can be a guy who turns on some performance. Wayne Ellington, started way too many games for my liking. He is just not great at all. I don't really see what the point of starting him was. I guess that's why the coaches lost their job. He finished 14th on the team in box score plus minus. None of his advanced stats look really impressive at all, to be honest. 0.8 win shares. Win shares per 48 were pretty pathetic. He averaged 7.7 points in 21 minutes. He does hit threes well, 36% and 1.3 made, but 2.3 rebounds, 1.1 assists, 0.6 steals, 39 and 86 is his percentage. He is a free agent, and that's great. Oh, no, he's not. Sorry, he's got a player option. He might opt out and go somewhere else. I think he probably does, considering it's only 1.5 million. But what's the point? He's 28 years old. He's not going to get better than what he is now. He's not going to get a better opportunity than what he had next season, which is a pretty recurring theme throughout this team. I don't really like the opportunity for Wayne Ellington. I just don't think he's any good, and his arrow is firmly pointing down to me. Markel Brown was a guy that I was pretty excited about. He finished the season ranked 323rd, but post-All-Star 221. It's a big improvement there, and he turns in games where you go, what the hell just happened? Why did Markel Brown just go and put up a 10-rebound game and have five steals or six assists or a triple-double or whatever he does? He does these weird sort of things. He finished the season at just 6 points, 0.6 threes, 2 rebounds, 1.5 assists, 0.6 steals on 39 and 76. But as a restricted free agent, I think the Nets would want to bring him back. They don't have many young players, and he is a young player who's shown some flashes at times. And I think that he can become a pretty solid backup. He's not a starting caliber player. We know that at this point. But I think he can become a fairly solid backup player in this league and put in some pretty nice numbers. The last 2 months of the season, he was ranked inside the top 150. 9 points he averaged there in 21 minutes, 0.7 threes, 1.2 steals. He got his field goal percentage up to 43%. I do like that what Markel Brown can do for, say, a 16-team league next season, because I think he's going to have a sort of 23-minute role as a defensive shooting guard who can also start to bring it, as we saw towards the end. He's not a three-point shooter, and that does limit what he can do. But rebounding is pretty aggressive from him. His defense is not too bad. And I think that he's got some value, but his ceiling is it's pretty limited. He's not a real high ceiling guy. His box score plus minus numbers are not awesome. His win share numbers are not awesome. His VORP numbers are not awesome. So nothing really great about him, but he could have a little bit of an increased role, similar to what we saw over the last couple of months of the season. And that makes him a 16 to 18 team league target. Definitely. I'm just not sure how high his actual ceiling is. So in Dynasty, expect a bit of an improvement, but not too much more than what we've seen. The next three players are not great players, but Thomas Robinson's probably the one that we need to focus on the most. He ranked 354th in 9-cat leagues and 334th in 8-cat leagues. But over the last part of the season, he was putting up some big numbers. It didn't improve his post All-Star rank. He was still 315th there, and he did put up some really big numbers. You know, a lot of double-doubles. I think he got double-doubles in about six of the last eight games, playing when Brook Lopez and Thad Young were both shut down to preserve their health heading into next season. But what is Thomas Robinson? You know, who is he? And despite the fact that over the last 2 months he played eight games, 24 minutes and averaged 12 and 11, he ranked 214th. Because he shot 32% from the free throw line. He was 52% from the field, but he doesn't block any shots. He doesn't hit threes. He doesn't get assists. He did average a steal a game in that time frame, which is not something he's really ever been able to do before. But he showed a little bit of a flash, Thomas Robinson. Now, he is going to opt out of that player option at $1 million and look for a bigger role. He thinks he should be starting. There's no team that is going to be starting Thomas Robinson. Yes, he's a super aggressive rebounder, but he does nothing else. He's not an offensive plus. He's not a defensive plus. Look, what does he offer a team? To me, he is someone that I think that people will be getting pretty excited about. Oh, look what he did, all these double-doubles, and they'll be anticipating a big move. There'll be people out there, maybe listen to this podcast, doubtful, that will think the Nets should bring him back and start him over Thad Young. There'll be people thinking that. He is not that good. He is not that sort of player to me. Offensively, he can do one thing, and that's basically just putbacks. He can't do anything else. He can't shoot. Defensively, he's not a rim protector at all. His numbers are not great in that sort of a realm. His win shares per 48, they're average. He finished 11th. Well, that's probably below average. Not a great look there. Just a below average PER, but look, a real rebounding menace, and that string of double doubles makes people think that he's good. So if for some reason you picked him up at the end of last season in a deeper dynasty sort of format, which is completely understandable assuming you could deal with a 30% free throw shooter, flip him. See who believes it. See who, and use that. Use those stats. Look what he did. Look, he averaged 10 rebounds a game over his last 10 games. He was a double double machine. And people love the term double-double. Oh, you got a double-double. You got a double-double. You average a double-double. People love it. Use it to your advantage. Send it out there. Send some trades, because I really don't think that he's going to do better than what he did in that stretch. He'll probably be better than what he's been throughout his career overall, but I'm not all that confident that Tom Robb is going to be someone who now is going to be a starter or going to be a 25-minute power forward, because he's just got too many glaring holes. Rim protection, offense, passing, all that stuff is just a big hole. He's just a situational. He's Reggie Evans, basically, with a little bit more offensive ability, and that's saying something. Willie Reed, I thought Willie Reed showed good flashes, but left the team at the end of the season for personal reasons, and that is really concerning. We don't know what they are at this point. He is a restricted free agent. When Brook Lopez was out, he looked really good to me. I thought that he showed enough flashes where, yeah, he should have been brought back and he should play, but he played 11 minutes a game, 5 points, 3 rebounds, 0.8 blocks, 57 and 55. To me, he offers more than Thomas Robinson because he does have that defensive presence. He is a bit of a better finisher at the rim as well. He offers more to me than what a Thomas Robinson does, but his mental state and this, you know, personal issue that's plaguing him is a real concern. He finished 6th on the team in box score plus minus. He finished 1st in win shares per 48. So if everything is right with him, I would be looking to bring him back. So I think he's got a ton of developmental value behind Brook Lopez. And to me, if you're talking deep dynasty, 20 teams, 300 players, Reed's a guy that I'm getting and just seeing what I can do with him, because I do think that he can come in and be a guy who averages a shot blocked a game and 5 rebounds in just 15, 16 minutes and contributes to your field goal percentage. I do really like Willie Reed, but I need to find out a little bit more about this issue and whether he's actually going to be playing, because it was odd when he had this great opportunity. Hey, you're going to be starting as the center on this team with Brook Lopez out, and he went, nah, I can't deal, I'm off. So there's a little bit of a concern there with Reed, but otherwise his actual play was pretty bloody impressive to me. Sergei Karasev, he had about one game where I went, ooh, hang on, Sergei Karasev can pass, Sergei Karasev can distribute. So I did a little bit of reading on it, and there was a little bit of talk, he can be a facilitator. It didn't really last all that long because he wasn't good after that, and he averaged just 2.4 points, 0.9 assists, 1.5 rebounds, 0.2 steals on 41 and 93. So a superb free throw shooter. But his fantasy ranks outside the top 400 in both 8 and 9 cat leagues, a real decrease on what we saw last year. Yes, he was coming back from a serious knee injury, but as a restricted free agent and someone who really hasn't shown us much of anything throughout his career. What do we expect from Sergei Karasev? He is only 22 years old, so that is a big positive in him, and I would be keen to bring him back over someone like Wayne Ellington. I would much rather have Karasev back, but he hasn't shown a huge amount. So I'm not looking at him and going, okay, well, Karasev is set for a big season, and everything's going to fall in place for him. But it was the season where he was recovering from ACL surgery, so I'll give him a little bit of a pass on some poor games. And he did show enough flashes that if I'm talking leagues with over 300 players rostered, 360 players rostered, that sort of area, he sneaks into me as a guy who might crack the top 300. And that's really not saying much at all, but it's something where I could see him doing it, because he did show some flashes of being a solid player and a solid backup who can combo guard, who can handle the ball and hand out four or five assists in a couple of games. And that's something that can be valuable. So don't completely write him off. To me, he's a better option than Ellington by a long stretch, a better option than Don Sloan. And at 22 years of age, maybe he's got a bit of growth in him, but I wouldn't be signing him for more than, say, one or two seasons just to see how it pans out. That is the Brooklyn Nets. They are done for the year. I'm going to take a quick break, and I'm going to come back to answer your questions.
This is the part with just the guitar. While we wait on the bass and drums, I'll sing of love and you from afar. Well, here they come in now. Me and the sky are on a roll. As we hit the halftime break, the chorus that you know, you can't see what I see.
Alright, so we're back just to wrap things up here with the Brooklyn Nets. We're going to talk questions that you guys have sent in. Not that many questions, a few, but we'll get to them. Daniel Bradley, who's on Twitter at D2BNZ. Are they likely to be able to attract any quality free agents? Well, we've still got the Brooklyn draw, the New York draw. There's obviously roles for players, but quality free agents? Al Horford, Kevin Durant, Mike Conley, Nick Batum, probably not. But Kent Bazemore? That sort of player could definitely fit in here, and they'll probably have to overpay for him. Ryan Anderson, probably not. No, I don't love Ryan Anderson, but there are guys who can fit in this team. And as I said, it's not bereft. Hollis Jefferson's got some talent. Lopez is really good. Thad Young, decent. Chris McCullough, a lot of potential. They don't have the assets coming forward, but they're going to have to be looking at younger players and hoping for breakouts in sort of guys. So quality free agents, probably not. KZ Marshall, who's on Twitter at NashGreerFan3. Where do you even start with this team? No present, no future, impossible assignment as a GM. Well, where you start is targeting guys who might be underappreciated or undervalued and hoping for a breakout. There are breakouts that happen every year. My mate Will Barton, Kent Bazemore, guys like this, Norman Powell in the draft, these players, that's where you got to start identifying them, getting D-League guys, Robert Covington, that sort of type of style, and growing them until you get your full load of assets back, making deals at the right time. If someone comes with a great deal for Brook Lopez, yeah, you do it, but you don't just trade him for the sake of trading him. So there is something there. Danny Triella, at D Triella. What is Rondo Hollis-Jefferson's value in Dynasty? I think it's pretty high. I think he's a top 100 player. He's got probably top 75 potential overall in his career, maybe even top 50. Really, really like him. Ben Clark at Scouse Raw. What free agent in their right minds goes to this stinking shit heap? Good question. Young players do who want a big role and want to go, you know what, I want to be the man, I want to grow myself, sign me to a three-year deal, then I'll try to max myself after showing that I can put up big numbers. So a guy like Bazemore keeps sticking out in my mind that might come and sign here. He really does have an opportunity to put up big numbers. A player like Rivers Vasquez I could see coming across as well, having an opportunity as a point guard to really, get a team back, and he could put up really good numbers in this sort of team. So there are players who will come here. Joseph Diffenbach says, will they play and develop their younger players, and will they build around Larkin, RHJ, and McCullough? They have to. So Hollis Jefferson is going to be a massive focus of this team. I think McCullough is more of a longer term thing, probably 2 years away, but they will get him into a 20 minute role and then they'll look to groom him into a starter as well. So I think they have to. Larkin's a little bit of a different story, but I do believe that they try and bring him back depending on what happens in free agency. And last question, along the lines of all the other ones, Danny Reid says, what the hell is his team's grand plan? The grand plan is to try and recover from the disaster that they're currently in. Finding young players, bringing excitement back, hitting some whatever draft picks they do have, making shrewd trades and shrewd free agent acquisitions, and using the D-League and using roster spots with common sense and trying to unearth players like they did a bit with Sean Kilpatrick, who showed that he can be a scorer. And just doing that over time, within a couple of seasons, they can get themselves back on track. And by then, Hollis Jefferson could have developed himself into a genuine star. I'm really excited about him, if you haven't been able to notice. We are done for today's podcast, guys. I hope you enjoyed the Brooklyn Nets season in review. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or on YouTube. You can do it there and give a thumbs up if you're watching on YouTube. Give a review and a ranking if you're listening on iTunes. Follow Basketball Monster on Twitter at Bask Monster for all the up-to-date news as the playoffs go through. And of course, Hardwood Paroxysm with great articles, great podcasts. I think a Heat Eulogy article just came out today, so go and read about the state of the Miami Heat season over on Hardwood Paroxysm. All right, we are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.